Action Park Media.
All right, welcome to Victory, the podcast. I'm Doug Ellen.
Kevin Connolly, the dog days of summer. It's the hard thing about podcasting, grinding out the summer days where people are, it's hard, man. It's hard, but we're doing it.
I'm going to need you for another 20 minutes after this.
For what?
You're going to have to do a ramble on with me.
I'll do a ramble on.
We've missed 2 weeks, and Ted is in busy business
stuff.
Yeah, so, we got to do one. We got to give a little update, but... interesting stuff. Couple of things we have. Yesterday, weirdly enough, I didn't even realize it.
And I know. It's crazy.
18 years since Entourage first aired in July 18th, 2004.
It's just crazy to think about. And it's funny how...
That is a full cycle of child support.
That's a full cycle of child support. But the crazy thing about it is that the internet reminds us every year.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? That's what it is. I just woke up to what's going on?
But what's even weirder is I remember 15th and 18th.
Right.
Now.
It just happened
nobody said anything
so
about
quick.
16th, 17th, and right. It just disappeared.
And then it'll be 20. It'll be 20. We're going to have a guest today. I love bringing on these kind of characters onto Victory to even hear what they think. We have Asif Cohen, who played Yair Marks.
Yeah,
very colorful character.
Just a phenomenal character, which you went and jumped ahead and watched the next episode, so I'm not even sure I know what's happening.
Yeah, I think we have to ask him what happens with his storyline, but we'll get to that. 18 years, that's pretty wild.
18 years, it's crazy because, like I just said, 15 years, we were kind of stunned. And now, I honestly thought it would be 16 now. I didn't even know why 18 became a big thing. But Jeremy posted it, and Jerry posted it. Adrian reposted Jerry Ferrara.
Ooh,
so that's exciting.
Interesting.
So, I know, we have
engaged.
To get him. If you just, why don't we call him on a group call?
Yeah, I don't know,
and
man.
And say, Adrian, we'll
Can I be honest with you?
Yeah.
My thought is... And I know that you were kidding, and it was kind of all in good fun. And there was a time where I think Adrian might have even thought that was funny. But I think what we did on the podcast, joking around, I think the Victory faithful and the Entourage faithful just blasted his Instagram, and I'm sure he got a bunch of shit for it. And whatever.
I spoke to him; he wasn't mad at me, but we can apologize again.
The bottom line is, we can apologize on the air.
We love him. We want him on, and we want him in the reboot.
Dylan is halfway through his shoot on Buddy Games 2. But
so
Doug, I have a question.
Three?
I have a question for you, Doug. So for people listening out there, if you ever read these articles or these stories in newspaper or high-end stories on people, they give access to a reporter or a writer for X amount of time, and then they write an article about you, right?
Yeah.
There's been several instances of that going well and horribly wrong, right? I remember Piven... got kind of, he believed he got hoodwinked on I don't know if it was Vanity Fair or GQ, but, we went out to dinner with a reporter who basically went on to write an article about what douchebags everybody was.
Yeah.
And I was at the dinner, right?
Yeah, so
I thought everybody was very well behaved.
And by the way, I wish I had that guy's name because... I'm being serious. You can write whatever you want. We're, for the most part, pretty nice, accommodating people.
Yeah.
And we did everything for that guy. And that jerk off, and I do want to find his name. He sat and talked to me about his wife and her writing career.
Right.
They, and they're just complete frauds. Now, Almost Famous is a really great example of how the reporter goes in and then writes his story when they give him access. But they were doing shit in Almost Famous that was not great. We did nothing with that guy who wrote that article about us. He just hated us and
I think we might be talking about two different things because I'm talking
about... Austin, Texas.
Oh, you're talking about the Austin, Texas guy. Yeah, that was different. That was when we were promoting the movie.
Yep.
We have that article saved. Yeah. That guy actually said nice things about me. So
I don't know if he said personally bad things about me either, which there would be
no reason
to. No,
he didn't really. No, all he basically said was, and again, that's the other thing too, that people, don't understand. When on a press junket, we really hit the pavement hard to try to promote the movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
It didn't work out or whatever, but it wasn't from a lack of effort.
But also, let's kiss a lot of people say,
But it was
it bombed. The movie broke even.
It wasn't a $200 million.
It didn't take
movie.
Warner Brothers down.
Correct.
I mean, there's a movie like The Gray Man from the Russo Brothers, which Gosling is in right now. Every article is this movie could take Netflix down if it's not a huge hit. Now, hopefully it'll be a hit.
Right.
And everybody's good. But Entourage had no effect on Warner Brothers.
This was a guy that wrote an article based on observing us at an after party at South by Southwest.
Austin, Texas.
The Austin, Texas.
And I can tell you, he wrote things.
What happened to Piven was a fucking hatchet. Job. I don't know, but Piven gave this person access, and I don't even know who it was. I know it was a high-end publication, and then I thought you know, because Piven's a seasoned veteran. I thought, hey, if this guy's sitting down for dinner, I thought it felt friendly to me. But they ended up lighting up Piven pretty good. So are you nervous with
happened? The reason we're talking about this is because Katie Baker, who I believe, I don't even know, because I am, part of me is...
Katie Baker from The Ringer.
I believe it's with The Ringer. I'm not sure if it's a, what do you call it?
She's writing an expose on you, Doug?
Yeah, but I don't know if it's a freelance piece where she writes it and then...
Right.
But for whatever reason, I liked Katie when she emailed me, and I'm being serious. If this turns into some trash thing, and honestly, I'm a nice guy. I've given her complete access. She's been on
the set.
You've
definitely been an open book. She came to set. She's been here a few times. She spoke to us. She's now, as we speak, watching the cut of Ramble On, which I know has you as a nervous wreck.
You know what? I'm not nervous anymore. I know it's good. Right. By the way, this is, as of 20 minutes ago, this is the finished, locked cut.
Do you think that this her watching the screening could change the slant of the article in a good or a bad way?
Well,
right?
Of course, you know, it's weird. I don't think there's anything in this show that you could go, I hated it. Right. It's quick. It's funny. It's got some touching moments. Could I see someone going, it's not my favorite show. I don't want to watch it.
Well, not everything's for everybody. Yeah.
But I honestly can't even see that.
Right.
I don't mean to be crazy, and I don't know what's going to happen with this thing, but I don't see anybody not just going, that's a good piece of filmmaking. You know what? I'll tell you
something. You're really putting yourself out there by doing that.
Yeah, you know? But I said, you can't talk about the plot. You can if you don't like it. Yeah. You can't write that you don't like it. But again, I haven't signed anything with her, so theoretically, she could do whatever she wants.
It could be just an absolute hatch job. I don't think it will.
And the only thing that I'm worried about, which happened on Entourage set, we had a reporter on the set one day.
When Dylan got pissed.
Yeah, Dylan attacked me, not physically, but he was ready to, in his bathrobe and his undies.
He's mad because you were giving him line readings in front of a reporter.
Yeah, but he didn't know the reporter was there. So as soon as Dylan came storming out in his undies and yelling at me, I said, there's a reporter right there writing everything.
But that reporter didn't write it down, right?
Well, Levinson, Steve, our producer, like owned the magazine or something. So
he controlled the media.
Yeah,
I like it.
But we have no control over this whatsoever. I've been really nice.
Yelled at me? Probably.
No. The only thing that happened is Ted and I.
You and Foxman gotten that dust up on the set.
Yeah, I mean, Foxman wasn't really, it wasn't a you and I. I was pretty pissed at him because we've talked about it on Ramble On, which Connelly's going to do the Ramble On podcast with me after this. But we were having a tough time with the scene. And Ted, in his defense, there were no tough times on this show in scenes. It all went relatively smoothly. Right. This was the first time. And we've always been so relaxed and so chill. But at this moment, we were in a little bit of panic because time was running out.
This is like the final day of additional. We did one day of additional photography. And what felt like sort of a loose kind of, we'll be done by lunch kind of day. But we hit a bump in the road. Thank God we had a loose kind of schedule that day because we ended up using the whole day.
Yeah, well, we played it a little casually, I think. And then all of a sudden it was like,
everybody fucking pay attention. Let's try to figure this out.
And also, you know, we love Bill Simmons, but Bill Simmons loved Entourage, but did take some shots at us.
Yeah, I mean, listen,
they're
kinda,
in good fun. That's what happens.
They're in good fun, and again, it's like if he didn't care, he wouldn't. You know, if you're watching every episode, you know, I guess maybe you're entitled to.
No, Bill signed his basketball book to me. Bill came to Mark's house to watch the thing.
By the way, Bill created the. Bill produced my 30 for 30. So Bill Simmons and The Ringer
that we both
is great. Yeah.
So, but what I'm saying is once the show's on the air and we're getting paid and we're getting Emmy nominations, trash us all you want.
Right.
I mean, like, I can take it then. Right now...
You're emotionally not built for a hatchet job right now.
I mean, and the show, we need all the positivity sell it and get it going, which is, it's now really, I know we've talked about this, I'm going to talk about it more on Ramble On, but it's game time and it's time to start showing it to whoever wants to see it, and I don't mean DM me that I'll show it to you, but anyone in town that wants to see it, it's time to show it, and we got to sell it and get going. So,
all right.
What else is up? That's it?
I'm excited about Yair Marks. We got Marlon Young Rufus is going to join us next week.
Gary
he's great.
Cole.
Gary
I know
Cole.
He's said he's going to do it.
I don't know how to facilitate that one. Can you take the reins on Gary Cole? I'm starstruck by Gary Cole. I don't want to call Gary
Lisa
Cole.
Lisa Gallant was supposed to be taking care of it.
Yeah,
so.
But can you just do it?
I could try.
You could try. I'll do. And Marlon, who played Rufus, which is interesting because I went to talk to Marlon about and Asif, you know, obviously, the way you write, when somebody comes back, that means you liked what they did.
Yeah.
Right. So what you did with Marlon is a perfect example. I mean, he was Rufus, the guy that came in to set up the stereo equipment. And, you know, two seasons later, yeah, you know, Turtle is dating his daughter.
Well, so in London. Yeah. And I just, he was so good. Right. That I had to figure out a way to come out. And then there were lots of discussions about it. Is it weird to just bring him back in this way? But it felt good, you know? Are you prepared today? Are you going to try to overdo it again?
No, I'm not trying to overdo it. I'm curious. I have some questions for him about coming in that late of the game. And it's kind of a big, kind of broad character. So I know he's capable of doing. He's got a pretty good range.
And last thing. So how was the reaction to the girls on the podcast? Did you get a good
feeling? It was good, yeah. I think, you know, I think it's definitely better than the first one that we, that was unairable. The first episode.
The hidden treasure that someday will be released.
Day will be released when you and I were snarling at each other for 40 minutes. We're in much better moods today, assuming that screening is going well with the Ringer.
Are you watching the show, The Boys? I think you would like it. And they took a little hit at us, which is funny because I'm sure it was personal from Seth Rogen because he's still weirdly like an ex-girlfriend. He's still mad. And I always want to repeat that the story is, you know, on the show, we called him ugly.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is he took the first swing at us, and you, Kevin, not just me, buddy.
It was just a
response rather than attack because I was a fan of Seth Rogen. And I think I've talked about it before. And when we get to that episode, we'll talk more. But when I couldn't find Jerry and I couldn't find a Turtle, Undeclared was a Judd Apatow show that was on the air. And I saw Seth Rogen in it, which is one of his earlier things. And I said, because I was obsessed with finding New Yorkers, which I know I was right, but when I couldn't find Jerry, I said, we should look at this kid from Undeclared. So I was a fan, and that all started because he was on the cover of GQ, and I bought the magazine while flying home with Lucas, who played Jonah on the show, and there was like all these shots at how bad Entourage was, which I don't understand why you would ever do when you're in the position he was in. But
well, you know, it's funny. I'm ready for this name drop. On 4th of July, I was with Chase Crawford. We should get him on because
he was
very close to getting the Haley Joel Osment role.
Yeah, if Chase Crawford was not better looking than all of the actors on the show, he would have gotten it.
You're right. If Chase Crawford were the Haley Joel Osment character who's better looking than Adrian and got $1 billion, yeah, I think Emily Ratajkowski would have been happy to be like, see you later, Vince.
and it would be fun to get him on because you were
really impressed with his audition.
He was awesome.
Right.
And
we'll get him on.
He was willing to do prosthetics. And honestly, it's weird because I'm looking, you know, the amount of time I spent looking at this guy, I'm like, and asking every girl I know, could this guy be ugly?
It was too close to go like, you would have to really go like, oh, I don't know, man. Like this young, good looking dude with $1 gazillion would be a good fight for Vince over a girl.
And he's great on The Boys. You should watch the show though.
Yeah.
It's a good show. You don't have any bandwidth.
Have time for show. I don't have the bandwidth for those shows.
So you're not watching anything.
You know what I want to watch? This Old Man show. Old Man. Supposed to be really good. Yep. That's what we're going to try.
Did you watch The Bear, which everyone's talking about?
I have not watched The Bear.
Yeah.
I don't watch anything. I watch horror movies.
Yeah. What horror movies? Anything new?
Yeah. Black Phone. Ethan Hawke. Ethan Hawke in a horror film? Ethan Hawke's not... Dude, have we been living under a rock? Ethan Hawke is like the high-end horror film guy.
What?
Yeah. He does The Conjurings.
This.
He does all the Blumhouse movies. It's great.
Wow.
Ethan Hawke. And it's called Black Phone. You know, it came out in the movies, but, you know, it's available pretty quick for $20.
How was it on iTunes?
But it's good. It's scary if you like that. It's a genre movie.
I mean, I love Ethan Hawke, so we'll have to check it out.
Well, he does a bunch of those things.
All right. Well, it's very exciting, and we'll be back. Welcome back, Victory the Podcast. A soft cone.
Woo!
I mean, it's wild because, first of all,
Yair Marks.
Whoa.
Yair, whose name came from one of our top producers, Ally Musica. It was her brother-in-law was Yair, and I like the name. And
that's where that came from.
Yeah, and Connelly makes a lot of fun of me because I don't remember this show that I spent every minute of my life making sure every word was as good as it could be, but I don't even remember if you were Arabic or Israeli. I know you're Israeli-American in real life, but I don't even remember.
I'm all over the map, man.
Was it never specified on the show? I don't think, I mean, listen,
I think we've talked about this before on the show. I think it was a combination of the Avi Lerner types and the, you know, these guys.
Right. I just thought we definitely specified at some point Arabic. But anyway, how you doing?
I'm doing great. I think the ambiguity is what played into it, is the fact that you cannot pin this guy down.
Who is this guy?
Exactly, because, you know, he talks about at one point, he goes, you know, I'm going back to Dubai, you know, but he's got this accent. I threw in some Hebrew, some little yalla yalla, you know, just to mix it up to keep everyone off base. So they can't quite pin the guy down. And that's, I think, Pippen says that. Even like, I don't know what he is. He could be Mossad.
You know, you're right.
Right.
You're right.
You know, like, who knows where his money comes from?
I have people still coming up today. It's like, oh, I love that French guy you did. I'm like, French guy? Of course.
Do people still mention it to you today?
Bro, you don't even know. You don't even know. I got, my parents were visiting me from out of town. So I was showing them like around Hollywood and Highland. This is like a year or so afterwards. Yeah. I'm like, okay, so this is kind of where the Oscars are. And they go, hey, fuck my wife. And I'm like, these are my parents.
They're like, Bob, welcome, Dad, welcome Mom. To Hollywood, yeah. Hollywood and Highland.
That's my life.
That is
so
fun. It was great.
This accent.
Yes.
Do you, I mean, did you have to work on it?
Not at all.
So it just comes so easily, naturally.
Middle Eastern accents are kind of like my thing. So there's like the Israeli is more like this, you know, the stereotypical Israeli. And there's the Arabic accent. It can be like all over. The, well, depends.
You this guy's
like,
a real actor, bro.
Yeah, by the way, I was about to say this. Zero chance Connelly could do an Irish accent.
No, I know. He coached me. Connelly coached me for the callback, you know?
I mean, it's crazy. You see how he could just do that? It's,
you didn't have a callback for this, did you?
Yeah, man. So like my, so this is a crazy story, you know? I don't know.
Yes.
This is a while ago, so maybe it's not fresh in your mind. But
no,
like,
let's go.
Oh, so, his mind is, there's nothing fresh about it.
Well, he's going to be a papa again, yet again. Not worthy. No, I think I had auditioned for Sheila Jaffe for a couple of things. I got really close. One was this Robin Williams movie. I got really, really close. And then they gave it to someone else who was really awesome. What the fuck? And then another HBO movie that I got really close to. I think I would have had to be naked. So they all said, no, not that.
You didn't want to be naked or they didn't want to be naked.
Nobody wants to be naked.
That's like horror naked. And comedy together. And so when I got the call for this, it was for season 3 already. And obviously, I was a fan of the show. Everybody, all my boys, we all love it, religiously watch the show. And so when I got it, I didn't get it through my agent like I get just about every audition. I got a phone call on my cell going, hi, I'm calling from so-and-so from casting. You want to bring us out for Entourage? I'm like,
That's bullshit. Weird.
I'm like, yeah, right, because this is how it works. Right?
Direct to consumer.
And so I was living like on Hollywood Boulevard in like studios with a bunch of actors in the building. And so I said, hey, man, do me a favor. Call this number back. That was on the caller ID. And I did. And it was Sheila Jaffe's office. I'm like, oh, man. And then so I got the sides. And, you know, apparently you guys had gone through some big names for that role. And it didn't work out to my benefit. And then so I had plenty of time to work on it, which today is not so much the case. You know, you get sides and it's like, boom, you got to tape it.
By tomorrow morning, we need the tape,
dude,
right?
No. And if you're kids, you know, you get it on a Friday evening. They're like, cool, do Monday morning. Enjoy your weekend. I'm right. Like, I don't have time.
But by the way, I love it. We all have kids. We have kids now.
But it was great. And it was a scene like with Vinny when he tells him, hey, you know, you'll go do what you need to do to my
dude,
wife
it's
if you
the
want
best. No, it's the best. When we covered the episode last week, we were fucking dying. You go like, go up and fuck my wife like the movie star you are. I will play billiards with your friends.
I get so much credit and love from people for that. And I'm like, thank you. I didn't write it, but thank you.
I'll play billiards with your friends line written?
That was
goddamn right it was written. Listen, there's some things I don't remember, which is wild. He makes fun of me all the time. And what's weird is when we started this
podcast.
You
got to see Doug. He's under the table uncomfortable when we watch these episodes.
What?
Yeah.
No.
Like he's all grown up now. And he was like, some of the jokes make him uncomfortable.
The jerk offs in the world who want to act like, by the way, like this doesn't happen. I've seen movie
of course
stars
it does.
Talk about this. Stuff. But what I want to say is when we started the podcast 2 years ago, it's like I remembered everything.
Right.
I don't remember. I mean, you're saying something that some casting director said to you. Not, I don't mean Sheila, like some casting director. I don't remember us ever talking to anybody. I just remember going, oh my God, this guy is going to crush it. And I have not watched that episode in years. And when we watched it the other day, we are laughing out loud.
Doug
so
is
hard.
Under the table because he's uncomfortable with some of the dialogue that's written. But
no,
I'm telling,
not
like,
that
it's
part.
Okay.
That
not
part
that
I absolutely love, and right. And it is.
I will play billiards with your friends.
Yeah,
that's the best line in the show.
And it's a tribute. Writing is obviously like the starting key point. But if you find an actor who can deliver in that manner, which you did, you then have gold. And I think people loved that character. You know, they wanted to see more of it.
It was a blast. And I'll tell you, I was already a fan of the show, and I think that worked in my favor here because the smart actor sees this guy is a big dick, right? He thinks he's not intimidated by anybody, right? Yeah. Not by Vinny, not by Ari. He's not intimidated by anyone. He's all about the money, money, money. He doesn't care about the art at all. And so like a smart actor would say, don't push strength, lean back, let the power, you know, kind of enjoy it, kind of feel it in. And I think if you don't watch the show, you might do that being the intelligent actor. But if you're playing opposite Vinny, you know, Grenier is like, chill. You know, he's cool, he's quiet energy. If you have a quiet and quiet, chill energy, you don't have the yin yang.
Right.
So you got to be coming after him. And like, it was just fun. Like, cause I know these guys. I know these guys. They're in Hollywood. You know them.
Yeah.
Oh, I know.
I'm like, are you kidding me? To be the entitled douche? Yes. Pay me to do this.
The other thing too, you know, about Doug is when he writes and people come back for, you just know when he's happy with an actor, which is obviously the case with you because the money, it falls through, right? But you're back.
See, I don't,
you
by the way,
back.
I don't remember.
Doug doesn't remember the storyline.
Yeah.
Okay. So I
don't remember.
You don't remember the storyline?
I don't remember my third child's name. she's not named.
So we go off to shoot the movie, right? And then, but you're at Cannes and Doug and I don't know what happens.
Okay.
Because Nikki Rubenstein finances the movie.
For a dollar. Oh, spoilers.
Did you rewatch anything before this?
I've seen it so many times, right, dude. I know. I have people quoting it back to me.
Are people still talking to you about this today? Is that what you were saying?
It happens. Not as much. Right. Dude, the first few years, it was ridiculous.
Yeah. Right.
I don't think it was a coincidence that I got my first series regular pilot, like right after. That was a USA pilot called Operating Instructions with Christine Lottie, Eddie Gathegi, some great people.
Yeah.
I don't think it was a coincidence. It was right afterwards. And then the next year, Nutter brought me in. And he pretty much handed me like a recurring guest on his pilot.
Oh, nice.
For CBS. And like, I don't think those were accidents. You know, like I know what the momentum came from.
Well, that's also, you know, an interesting thing about the town. Because we're talking about it. We have a new pilot now. We got to go sell. And people forget so quickly. But when you get on a hot show.
Yeah.
Even you're the same actor, but all of a sudden you're just on fire. And, you know, we know lots of people who came off of this show, from Scotty Khan, who got, and I'm not saying we got it from, the guy's amazing.
And also
but
Reese.
But got a Y5O after.
Reese, who plays Billy Walsh. He's so, good in this storyline with everybody.
I would have liked more of Reese in a song.
Yeah, I mean,
that's a good team right there.
Don't do that.
The reboot.
But
so,
when you're, like, it's season 3 of a show. The show is obviously at, like, the height of its popularity, and we've talked about this. That was the season where we did 20 episodes. That one almost killed us. That was a rough go. I guess there were not so many ways to play the character, but you really came in and you went for it, right?
Talk a little bit about
that, right? So you go in and you're like, you just make your decisions and you pull the trigger, and until somebody tells you different, that's it. What's your process like?
I think it really depends on how the character fits into the story, because sometimes you're just there to relay storyline. You know, you're just Mr. Juxtaposition, okay? And I've done that, you know, where you're like, okay, you know, the suspect was killed at so-and-so, you know, here's your cop or whatever. If you're just doing that guest star type position, it can be tricky. But sometimes you're driving plot, you know, you're pushing storyline forward and you're central. And I'm like, I saw this one. I'm like, oh, damn, this is something. So this is a chance. And I saw the character. I'm like, oh,
I know this guy. Right.
These guys are entitled mofos. And I know them, being Middle Eastern. And I know that. And so I had to go big or go home.
Right.
Because it was written that way. I don't know. Was it Rob Weiss who wrote this one?
I don't know.
There's names on the script. But at the end of the day, Doug
It was Doug. Yeah. But it was written that way. And I'm like, this guy is just all going for it. And so why hold back?
Right.
Go big, go home. And I decided to go big, and it kind of worked out, I guess.
Right.
But the audition was for the casting person, brought me back. I don't remember if it was the same afternoon or the next day, but it was like big room up around, you know, wherever that office was, fifth floor. And you were there, and it was like a room full of people.
Just
I don't know who they are.
The dudes on their
and
phones.
You were laughing. I'm like, Doug Ellen is laughing. This is good. And then I had to wait for like 2 or 3 weeks.
Really?
Oh, God. I was sweating.
They got a pin in you.
I'm not involved in that.
Nobody cares about actors' feelings. They don't. They're like, just put them on the shelf for 3 weeks and let them think about it.
I care tremendously, and I would never even be involved in that. Because first of all, I'm quite sure we were like, you're in. But when they put pins and stuff so people know, I mean,
I hate that.
Do you know that
expression.
Sarah's friend?
It's like annoying.
Did you ever hear about this? Sarah's friend had to go to Florida. My girlfriend's friend had to go to Florida. She's got a pin in her to be the backup in case the person, this is for a commercial, in case the person who has it gets COVID. So she has to just go
COVID
to Florida.
Backup.
Oh, they're doing that. My friend spent time in Hawaii for a commercial.
I mean, it's not terrible,
get a
I guess,
week.
But
they flew him out.
And you're just on call in case somebody gets COVID, you step in?
Exactly.
That's got to just feel weird, you know?
That's strange.
But, you know, on Entourage, we had, you know, Ari's wife, she was doing Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
Yeah.
So we had another actor on set because we didn't know if Doug Liman was going to let her off to do the show. And And she showed up maybe like, 2 minutes before. Otherwise, like, it would have been like a different actor.
Less than a half hour left before shoot the scene. And if you think about what that became, not even just for the show, for her.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's why we talk about actors. If you're good to the producers and they like you, they'll let, you know, if Doug Liman could have said, I'm sorry, what do you mean? I need her.
Go sit in the trailer.
Go sit in the trailer. And where, you know, and he said, but if you're good to people that you work with, they'll try to make those things happen.
We've talked about this a lot, but like Tom Selleck couldn't do Indiana Jones. I mean, Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Is that right?
Yeah.
He could not get out of Magnum P.I.
Now, Tom Selleck's made $500 million in this business, so it's not a tragedy, but who knows? Maybe he's a giant Academy Award winning movie star.
Listen, it's hard to imagine anybody besides Harrison Ford as Indiana Jones, but if it was Tom Selleck, it would have been just as good, and it just
would have been different.
If Spielberg wanted him, we got to think he knew something. Just like, you know, we had Anthony Michael Hall on, who turned down Ferris Bueller. It's almost impossible to imagine Matthew Broderick not being Ferris Bueller, but Anthony Michael Hall was so great that of course he would have been good.
Anthony Michael Hall, when he was on here, he said that negotiations fell apart on Full Metal Jacket.
What?
Yeah.
But that sounded a lot like he wanted money. Oh, no, I know what. They wanted to lock him up for like a year. Kubrick said, like, I don't even want to hear it. I need you for a year.
Yeah.
And they were like,
well, by the way, he would not have let Anthony Michael Hall leave for the Entourage. So what are you working on now? What's going on?
Since the pandemic kind of clicked in, I've been doing a lot of voiceover.
You've got a great voice. I was just thinking
that. Thanks, man. Right. I appreciate it. Right. I was doing some audiobooks, and then that really took off. And then video games.
You get paid on that. You get paid doing
that. Yeah, video games. I'm just coming over and over and over. And everything makes you sign NDAs now. I've got NDAs on everything.
So you can't talk about
anything.
I can't name anything because like, I've signed my soul away.
By the way, I have like 6 shows going right now, but I have NDAs.
You have NDAs.
I'm starring in a future massive science fiction film.
You're the new Indiana Jones, but he can't tell us. You'll see it.
You know, it's funny. It's crazy that you don't remember how he, if Rubenstein finances the Medellin, how does Yair Marx come back into the fold?
I honestly do not remember.
So back in Cannes, I want to get Medellin, right?
I know he was at Cannes. He saves the day.
Nicky
dies or gets arrested, right? Yeah, he gets arrested.
I'm going to buy it, and then I see the screener, and then I'm like, oh, that's the worst piece of crap I've ever seen. I said, good luck, Ari. And then I walk out.
Oh, so he doesn't get involved.
I choose not to. I'm spoiling your show for you.
People started hitting us up yesterday. It was 18 years ago yesterday that the show premiered.
How is that possible?
Yeah. I don't even want to get into
makes
it. Yeah.
No sense.
So, exactly.
By the way,
we're all going, what the fuck, man? 18 years. So people were sending me clips.
Years.
Dude, I saved it. I'll send it to you guys. It is, of course, Piven is like world class funny. But when we're panning through the screening and Piven is sleeping during the screening, I mean, it's literally laugh out loud funny. And he's sitting there. And do you know where we shot, where Yair Marx's boat party was in Cannes? It was in Marina Del Rey.
Yeah.
We were not in Cannes. We were in Marina Del Rey.
And do you
That's
going to
be a fun season.
Do you know where that
cover.
Sleeping came from? Do you know where that idea came
well,
from?
Well, I mean, I'm sure people fall asleep in movies.
Of course, it happens all the time. But a lot of stuff comes from me personally. And during the Connelly Doesn't Like When I Talk About This very, very classic movie. But during the premiere of Kissing a Fool, Jason Lee was out cold, the star of the movie.
Well, he probably saw the movie 82 times.
I don't think he ever saw it. I think he hated it. I don't know. I've never heard from him again since. Never.
You ruined his career. He fell asleep at the premiere?
Sound asleep. Out like a light, and
he's got a lot going on. Who knows? Somebody's shoes.
I'm not blaming him. He might have hated the movie. Listen, everybody's entitled to whatever. I loved Medellin, and I went to slept through it.
What did you do? You did 4 episodes, right?
I wish. No,
3.
It was 2, but it felt like 4.
No.
Trust me, I'm getting the residuals. No, it's 2. It was 3:14 and 4.
You just watched
something.
It was
the one where I bring him to my home,
right?
That crazy mansion with the floors made out of glass.
With Julian's wife, Bronca, playing
Right, with Bronca. Was amazing.
Yep.
And then the other one, and then Cannes.
That's it.
That was it. And Cannes, I only filmed one scene. And they're like, hey, the boat fell through, so we could send you back home tomorrow, or you could stay here for another week, on us. I was like,
I'll stay.
This is before I had kids. I think I'm going to stay.
Yeah.
And that was
why not L.A.
so
on you guys?
Fun.
Well, you're on the boat, right? There's the boat party. And then you were at the screening, which was
Pasadena.
UCLA.
UCLA.
That at UCLA. Doug is like, where were you, bro? Where were you?
That was the 20 episodes.
That's what it was.
I was in a padded room going, I'm going to kill myself if I don't fucking figure out how to get
that's what we do in voiceover. In little padded rooms talking to yourself.
I'm very bitter about this voiceover. A lot of people, I don't know if you know, say I have a nice voice.
You
Why
do?
Can't
strong
I get
strong vocal talent.
Yeah, by the way, I don't know if anyone's listening who can hire me. me, but I can do an audiobook. I can do a commercial.
Yeah, you'd be good. You'd be
or
good.
Even Indiana Jones coming soon.
So
fight Tom Selleck.
What else is going on? Anything jump out? I mean, aside from, I mean, the boat day was a great day. What were some? Because like you also were wasn't a little lot of downtime when you were on with like big dialogue. Wasn't
it was crazy? So for the first episode, I was so amazingly excited and terrified at once because I'm a fan of the show. I love it. And everything was in one day. We filmed all of that episode where you meet him and Bronca, all that stuff in one day. And it was literally like 5:45, 6 a.m. call, wrap it like 10:30.
It was dark.
It was a long day. It was my first time I had a double banger. I'm like, sweet.
For everybody listening, a double banger is a trailer. It's made up of two rooms, and we all had double bangers. So
you guys didn't get singles? What?
No. We all shared double bangers.
Shut up.
Yes, it was. It was me and Adrian, Jerry and Dylan, and Piven and Rex, and they would rotate out Piven
shared. I didn't get to spend a minute in there. I changed into wardrobe and at the end of the day when they wrapped me and that was it.
You did not enjoy the double banger. That's what I'm saying. It was such an intense workload for you. You weren't really like kind of standing
around.
It
was.
And
so I think it just chewed me out in one day. And I was intimidated in the beginning because like, okay, wow, there's scenes with Piven and you guys. And I'm like, okay, Don't get fired. And Piven's like, okay, I like to start by improvising. And so, you know, and I'm like, oh, okay.
What?
Remember, okay. He liked to riff before they rolled action. I'm like, okay, so I feel like he's like feeling
pre-roll.
Pre-roll.
And I was like, okay. I can swim here. So he's starting to like give me some crap. And I'm like, okay, I can scooter bite my back at him. That's fine. And he's like, okay, this will be fine. And then it was, then from then on, it was just a blast. You know, like the writing does the work for you.
Yeah,
honestly.
Yeah,
oh, look at Doug.
Didn't
loves
do the work
that.
For Kyle.
Yeah, loves that. No. I remember that day was dark to dark.
Yeah.
It was dark when we got there, and it was dark when we left.
So did you get a chance to hang with these guys
by the pool, by the boat we did, a little bit.
Yeah, so like I spent time with Grenier in Cannes. You know, there's some downtime, so he kind of like took me under his wing. He's like, okay, you're not as tight with the rest of like the crew or the cast. So he invited me to like parties. And
so Adrian was the only one who welcomed you.
Not the only one. That's not true. Everybody was nice.
Did Adrian stay? Did we all fly back together? You stayed.
I stayed till the end, but I remember we all flew there together. We were on the same flight. And then on the way back, I think it was kind of piecemeal as far as I remember.
Right.
But there was a nice layover in Germany. And then when they let you like sleep there in these little pods and sort of about, I'm like, what is happening here?
No showers.
No showers in Germany.
Joking.
I was in Cabo. But.
And Julia Levy-Boken was on that. And, you know, just we both had a lot of downtime. And, you know, so we're just hanging out. My friend Raina was there. She's a producer. She happened to be there for Cannes at the same time. And
is it Cannes or Cannes?
You're asking me? I'm not from French.
We don't know.
I think it's Cannes.
Is it Medellin or Medellin?
Medellin.
Do you know how many times that was spoken wrong on the show? I mean, like 30?
Well, it's funny. My wife or my baby mama, wife, whatever you want to call her, she is from Medellin.
She would know. Medellin?
She said it's Medellin.
Yeah.
Medellin.
I was calling it Medellin. I mean, I can't.
No.
Oh, my God. Like, part of me wants to go back and re-loop old episode.
I actually need to talk to Zulay about this because, of course, I know it's
by
Medellin.
By the way, we booked our tickets. I'm spending Christmas in Medellin.
What?
Okay, but I don't want you to walk around trying to throw out fucking bad accents.
Just be American.
I mean, do they want that though? I'm being serious. I want to ask Zulay this. Do they want you to try to say Medellin or do they want you to just say it?
I don't think they really care, but that's not how you say it. It's Medellin.
They just don't want you to massacre their language sometimes. Yeah. They're like, no, just say it your way. Stop trying to destroy. English people, like, just don't try to say it.
I would kill to follow Connolly around Colombia. Yeah. Like, he's not going to stand out there at all. I mean,
I'm going to blend right in.
Sounds like a documentary to me. Got a camera to follow him around.
Zulay's dad was like, why don't you just leave your, just don't even bring your watch. By the way, I don't even have a watch. I have like a regular watch. Oh, like nothing. He said, don't even bring it. Just leave it.
It's a regular watch. It's a Rolex.
I know, but it's not like a diamond.
It doesn't have to be a diamond. They'll fucking cut your arm off.
That's basically what he told me.
He
said, you'll be fine. Just leave it.
It's 1,000 times better than it was when Pablo was there. But no, I leave your watch. I don't even walk around with a nice watch in this town, let alone in Medellin.
Maybe it's insured. Then it's okay.
Exactly. What's your sort of, I mean, obviously you did your accent run in the beginning here, but what has been your acting training? And did, were you just naturally learn those things or?
Naturally douchey. I've been acting since fifth grade, you know,
right, but did you study or did
you
seem to have a method down or whatever?
It just depends on what you're working on. Because sometimes, you know, you could just kind of go by impulse and go by instinct. And sometimes it helps to have a craft. So I started with community theater, children's theater before that, and then I started doing semi-pro, then I started doing like professional equity theater type stuff, and then I decided to go to the East Coast, did an MFA program in acting, studied with Bill Esper, who sadly passed away.
See all these things? Like, every great actor, or 95% of great actors start on the stage.
It helps.
It really does.
Almost always. But there are exceptions.
Of course. You know? Yeah. I mean, but it's a really
You don't get the cut. You know, you don't get the cut in the middle. You have to work your way through it. And, you know, you get to have a live audience.
Right.
That's, there's nothing like that.
Right.
That just teaches you instinctively what's working, what's not. And if you have children in the audience, even better. Because, man, they're not polite. If they're not feeling it, they'll let you know.
They'll let you know.
So did that and then finished an MFA program and then did showcases for agents and casting directors in New York and L.A. and got pretty good response in L.A., came here, and then 9/11 happened. And then, you know, Jack Bauer killed me a couple of times in season 4 and then season 8 again.
Wait, what do you mean?
Two different guest stars, season 4 and season 8.
As different characters.
Dude, yes.
Wow.
So by the time I went to the producer session for season 8, every single actor in that room had been on the show already, been killed by Jack Bauer, and there was one dude was not. I'm like, I don't know that dude. So I walked up to him, like, hi, my name's Asaf. He's like, hey, do I know you? I'm like, no, but we all know each other. Who are you? He's like, oh, I just came here from New York. I'm like, welcome. You too will be killed by Jack Bauer. You too will be dying.
I can't believe they killed you twice.
Oh, it's like Law and Order. Like, they just wait a few years. Okay, all right, it's been long
enough. Well, I mean, they liked him. Bring him back. He's good, right?
He died well. He died very well.
That's interesting to know if Dick Wolf can do it, because I was always nervous. The only people who ever came back were Colleen Camp, and it was on
It
was because someone bailed on us last second, and one other person had.
Ethan Suplee.
Ethan was in Queens Boulevard.
Then he played the bartender at Goal.
Right.
But Colleen Camp, what happened was Colleen Camp, who, I mean, she gave, whatever we could say, she gave Dylan the rim job, right? Somebody had dropped out and she stepped in on the last day to do the role. And you're like, I'm not going to.
Not the rim job. She stepped in to play a real estate agent because Martin Landau's girlfriend refused to show up.
Right. Oh, that's what it was. So
we'll get into that story one day, which is, I remember well.
You didn't think it would be right to, like, hey, she did us a favor by playing the real estate agent. You didn't want to hold it against her for that other role, the good role that she ended up getting with Lisa Rinna. That's what it was.
No, she did the good role first. Yeah.
Was that what it was?
Colleen did the good role. She did the rim job of Dylan. That's a good role. And Colleen Camp, by the way, is one of my favorite people, but she's, you know, if you could see her in Apocalypse Now and Clue. She was hilarious in that scene with Lisa Rinna. But that was first. And then we were scrambling in the middle of the day to find her, and I called Colleen. She did us a favor. So.
Right. I have a question. So with everybody's, not typecast, but like, so you're going in, like you said, Jack Bauer killed you twice, right? Is it frustrating to, you know, like my friend Vinny LaRue, Resca, who, you know, he's been in Juice. He's like, listen, he's a Latino kid. He's like, yo, look, I mean, like, I can be more than a drug dealer. I don't have to be a drug dealer. I can do these other things. Is there part of it frustrating that you feel like, okay, here we go again, or, right? It has to be
Yes and no. It's kind of like a double-edged sword. In some ways it helps you, in some ways it hurts you. But if you're fortunate, if you are able to do good work, and if you start having people who believe in you, like good casting directors, like Sheila Jaffe, for instance, or other casting directors who really believe in you, and they say to you, hey, man, you're not going to get this. I had one casting director, Nan Dutton, who used to cast CSI Miami. I went in once, and she's just, bam, shoots from the hip. And people are like, oh, she's so direct.
Right.
And so I came in once, and I auditioned for something, and she said, stop, I'm not going to cast you for this. You're not going to get it. I'm like, damn, I must have pissed her off. And she said, no, you're really good, but you're not going to get this. I don't want to waste your time. I'll bring you in for something else, but I like you, but you're not going to get this. So go home. You're not going to get this, but I'll bring you in. And then eventually she did. So
I don't know if I mean, part of me likes that, and part of me, I don't know. I don't know how I would feel about that. I've been in versions of that.
That's not a typical experience.
Right. But there are things where, like, all right, thank you for not wasting my time, because I don't have a ton of free time to give.
Right.
Appreciate the honesty, but just make good on it, right? So did she ever cast you?
She did. Okay, I did a guest spot on that, and that was fun. But if you're lucky, then they finally see you, and they kind of get your essence. And if you're fortunate, you start building up a resume, you get the credits, and if your team is behind you and they get you, then they're able to say, hey, look, he's got some work behind him. He's got some guests, some recurrings, maybe a pilot. How about you see him for this? And if they're open-minded, they'll say yes. And that's kind of worked out. So yeah, I haven't gotten too many of those in the past, I don't know, 10 years or so, like right. playing terrorists and stuff right. like that. I did for a while, did the JAGs and the NCISs and all those guys. And it was great. It's wonderful. Good residuals.
Right.
And experience. But you know, like, then you start playing doctors and douchebags, and like, this is right. fun. It's really fun to play it. And like, a lot of times those storylines are tragic, and sometimes they're stereotypical. But I feel like the writing in general has gotten more sophisticated. You know, I think the networks and they're expecting more. They're like, okay, we know the two-dimensional stuff. That's not really going to fly 2022. What would have passed 20 years ago, that's not going to cut it today.
Right.
So the storylines tend to be more... fair and right. more inclusive and diverse, you know, and all those catchy words, which is a good thing right. overall. But it's a double-edged sword. Sometimes it helps you, sometimes it hurts
right,
you.
Like after the show, acting is fun.
Yeah,
right?
I had casting offices that wouldn't see me. They tell my agent when they pitch me for stuff, they're like, no, he's got a thick accent. I was like, this guy needs to sound like he's from the U.S. And my agent would be like, he was born in the U.S. I know, but he's got that thick accent. He's really old. He's like over 50, 60. And they're like, you know, they grade his hair for that. And that's not his real accent. He can, they're like, no, we know. I'm like, oh, well.
But that's so a again, funny thing. But it's also speaking to what you were saying earlier, and I think actors should understand this. You said, oh, sometimes you don't have enough time to prepare.
Yeah.
75% of the time, the person knows you're not the right person right. when you walk in the room, or you might be. So the only time that extra acting, to me, is going to make a difference is if you're in the ballpark of what they're looking for. So
I agree. Obviously, you would know since you're a guy that would do that. But to your point, you got to also be good every time.
Yeah.
People are like, oh, why don't you just throw yourself on tape? I'm like, well, I'm not just going to throw myself on tape because you got to be consistently good. And that casting director's got to know that you're not going to make them look stupid
exactly.
when they bring him in front of the producers. And it's like, hey, they're going to see X amount of guys. This guy's not going to let me down. He's going to be good, right? So,
yeah,
I agree, Doug. Maybe the decision is made like,
this is
a waste of time. This guy's not the guy or not the
girl. We've talked about many examples. Haley Joel Osment, who, you know, I just, like, he acted his way into that role when I didn't think he was the guy. And he was just so good. Gary Cole, you know.
Come on.
Gary Cole.
So good.
I mean, now, Gary Cole, obviously, I would have written a part just for him, but he wanted to play this part that I already written for, like, Eric Bogosian. They're such different types. Wow. But Gary's like, let me read for it, which was...
awkward.
Still, yeah, for me, it was awkward.
Yeah, it should be.
You know, and he just blew me away.
By the way, Gary Cole, like, picked up the sides and read him blind and... Like, that was like, okay, well, I guess he's hired.
Change the role. To Gary Cole. Yeah. No.
He's so good.
How do you feel about the self-tape?
Oh, man, it's complicated. I think it helps a lot of actors and it hurts some. You get to do some, a lot of times the problem is that it's not so much that you have to self-tape, but you don't have feedback. You don't have immediate feedback in the room, which is crucial. It's been really helpful to me. I noticed that, like, I definitely had, like, a serious attrition rate in my booking rates since self-tape started because it's a combination of factors. Because so many times when I booked, I'm in the room, the casting goes, okay, that was great. Try it more like this because what they're actually looking for is something more like this, which is a complete shift. I'm like, okay, I can do that. I could take a note and boom, and then you book it. If you don't do that, if you don't get what they're going for in the first take, when you're self-taping, you're likely not going to get it. But you could submit several takes, but different casting offices feel differently about it. Some will be like, great, we'll choose the one that's better. And some will say, oh, he's just not confident. We'll just, let's move on. You never know. And if you get a lot of sides, you just don't have time to memorize them. And you don't want to be holding paper.
Too many sides.
So I miss the immediate feedback that you get. I understand COVID, not wanting to be in the room, and I get that stuff. But, you know, I'm hoping that we can start going back to that once, you know, people are getting vaccinated and if, like, the numbers start going down.
I just don't
think
it's going
to happen. You really? Were you taking self-tapes during Entourage?
It's just a different... They're probably literally tapes, right?
Yeah, like videotapes,
like
VHS,
scary,
right?
But I think
they started out
tapes.
As tapes for sure, but then they turned into DVDs. But, you know, I was cast.
Ooh, really stepping into the new century.
But I was casting, you know, two things during the pandemic. This football show with Thierry Henry and then this Ramble On show I did with Kevin. And I hate it. Hate it. But I still
Having to watch actors on tape?
I like to be in the room, right. You know? And I understand that the casting director is obviously, you know, I like them to be in the room too. Right. I don't want everybody getting tapes. And I also, I don't like actors to overwork something before they've had any feedback. Because I sometimes like to see a guy and go, okay, he's in the ballpark. Let me try to get him where I'm thinking. And I think it's totally lost. But I don't, the waste of time when I think about the years I've wasted traveling to fucking Santa Monica for 14-minute meetings that had no value, and now you do it over the phone and it's over, you know?
You know, your friend Sheila, who obviously, you know, we worked with for years, and I've known Sheila for, 25 years. We had her on the podcast, and we asked her, and she said, without question, it's not even close. She says, she's with you. If I can't give you a note to tell you what they're looking for, you're at a disadvantage.
Yeah.
Now, me, I love the idea of being able to do it till I love it. And then I send one take, right? And if that's 12 takes that I did, but I want to send one and go, all right, listen, I'm confident that I'm not humiliating myself with that audition. But that's my interpretation of the script or the sides that I've read when the casting director really could send you in the right direction. Yeah. So hopefully, for actor's sake, you get back
to that. But Connelly and I talked about this an hour ago. I mean, you did a scene when I wasn't on set, and you could have done it in, I just had to say one thing to you. It would have taken 9 seconds, but so he interpreted it differently.
Anna Faris rear ends me.
Yeah.
And I go to her house, and she's like talking to me through the speakerphone. She says, Where how'd you find my house? And the line was Star Maps, right? I just played it straight. I'm like, Star Maps. I thought that he stopped on Sunset Boulevard.
That's hilarious.
Doug calls me. He's like, what is wrong with you? I go, what do you mean? He's like, wait. He's like, that's a joke. That's supposed to be a joke. You're always complaining you don't get jokes. I give you a joke. I'm like, yeah, well, if you were on set. But it was a complete different. And again, because of the 18th anniversary, I'm getting like bombarded with clips. Yeah. And somebody sent me that clip yesterday too. And
but my point is, he might have auditioned, then I see it and go, this guy's doesn't get it.
He doesn't get the joke.
He doesn't get it. You know, and also, and that ruins your writing, because saying that he stopped at Star Maps
I thought it was weird, but
makes him like a fucking idiot, you know?
It completely changes the scene.
Yeah.
Of course it does.
Yeah. And it's in there.
It's like sarcastic, like, oh, Star Maps. You're such a huge star. I got it from Star Maps.
It's so hard to find you, Anna.
Nowadays, you just be like, Google.
Right.
Well, by the way, we can't even find her. We've been trying to get to the podcast for 3 years. Yeah. We can't find her. So anyone
can't find her?
No.
And I wonder, for anyone who's listening, I wonder if they even know what Star Maps is anymore. Like, Star Maps
or Thomas Guide, right? I still have one, I'm sure.
I couldn't read that shit. That shit would kill me. Life would be over if I still had to go to the Thomas
Guide. People listening, when you moved to L.A., it was like part of the L.A. starter pack. You had to have a Thomas Guide, which is basically like a giant book that you had to almost learn how to read it, right? You couldn't just like flip it open. You had to kind of know what you were looking at. Thank God.
It was tough. And Star Maps, where guys sat on the side of Sunset Boulevard, and if you wanted to know where celebrities live, they had maps to the stars, but he was not checking that.
I live up the hill. When I'm driving up the hill and there's a car in front of me, clearly a rental car going 5 miles an hour. Yeah, it's got me going, I wonder who lives there. I might have to pick up a Star Map. I want to roll down the window. Like, hey, what are you guys looking at over here?
We should bring Star Maps back. Victory Star Maps.
I would love to take a like one of the horror tours or some of these house tours. If there are a bunch by my house that
Connelly
people stop in front
loves
of.
Horror. Have you done any horror?
Like low budget horror.
Oh, the best kind.
Oh,
best kind.
God. Yeah, I have. It was great.
Let's see if Connelly's seen any of your work.
I don't want to name them.
He's got an NDA. You got an NDA.
NDA is nothing mainstream, low budget movies, but you know, low budget.
It's a fun genre. I like to watch, because one when you find a little hidden gem of a horror movie that you know clearly is low budget but hits the right chords, I like it. I'm into it, Doug. We should do a horror movie.
Let's do it. Let's turn Ramble on into a horror movie. Fucking, we killed Dylan. It'd be fucking hilarious.
Oh boy.
All right. What else? Yeah. What else? So what do you know? What's next, or you don't know? Like
working on a video game, two video games actually.
Nice.
And
first person shooters, or you can't say.
They're AAA games, I can tell you that, but they're hardcore about their NDAs.
Yeah.
And then did an animated thing, which is awesome. Finally, something my kids can watch.
I know. I think the same thing, man. My daughter's young. Anything. How old are your kids?
One just turned 5, and the other one is 7.
Right.
Two boys.
They're not going to see Yair Marks.
Not for
they
a while,
They will not be
I
watching
hope.
Yair Marks
I hope.
In any capacity.
You don't know.
But that changes things, right? I mean, I just had my daughter's almost 14 months old, and it's just
14 months.
Yeah.
Oh,
so,
man.
Were you here for the pandemic? Did you stick it out here?
I was here the whole time. Well, I was in Hawaii for a month filming Magnum for a month. That was during
just
the pandemic.
Was that just a testing every
horrible.
Day?
Horrible. Just, you know, stuck. I mean, I missed my wife and children radically so much. You know, she had to be alone with the kids, and I had to be stuck in Oahu. It was amazing.
It was, but it wasn't like the COVID thing wasn't like a super bummer.
It was really, everything was kind of locked down here in California, but at the time, Hawaii's numbers were really, really good.
Right.
And so when I got there, nobody was wearing masks inside the restaurants, inside, which was crazy to me. I'm like, what kind of weird Twilight Zone world have I walked into?
Right.
But their numbers were really low. We still had to be wearing masks. They said, hey, you don't want to be the jerk who flew in from LA and now they have to replace you
because your stupid butt
went to a bar and got COVID
and
brought it. But we had people who tested positive, and so they had to constantly change the board. So our thing got extended, and so I was there for like almost a month.
For one episode.
It did not suck. I went scuba diving. I just got to know the island, and I'm like, it's not too shabby of a place. Hey, Entourage spinoff. Entourage Hawaii.
Scott
Kahn, right? He hated it. He had like a minor meltdown. Listen, it's easy to say, but you know, to be there for 8-9 months a year on a show like that for 5-6 years, I don't know. You could love the island. I don't think it would be good for
me. It's tough. I don't want to. Scott got in trouble for talking about Hawaii. Obviously, he loves Hawaii, but living there, especially where he was, it was definitely isolating.
9 months out of the year. Sign me.
I was pretty happy. The water's warm. Right. The people are so kind.
It's a beautiful place.
Of course, it's beautiful, but island fever is a real thing. It's not made up.
Connelly, Dylan, and I went to Hawaii. We didn't last a week.
Right, exactly. I didn't have island fever in 7 days. No, I'm saying. But, you know, I could see season four, like, could be daunting going to Hawaii, moving away, your
season
family.
Doing the lead, which, you know, we all want to do that. The lead of a single camera show is a very hard job, no matter where it is.
It's exhausting.
It's exhausting. So. Right. Anyway, this was great,
good stuff.
Man.
I love when we get actors on to give insight, because I always am curious about like the self-tape and the audition process. A lot of actors listen, so
it helps if you have a good reader too, is what my friend who works in casting said. Hey, it really, really, you know, you don't have to have a fancy camera is what I'm understanding. Just good enough lighting, ring lights or, you know, basic softbox or whatever.
Sheila said she doesn't give a shit about lighting.
As long
right?
as they can see you, they can hear you, you're framed well, and your reader doesn't suck. And if your reader isn't good, it's hurting you. It has nothing to do with your performance. And like, I love my wife to pieces.
Oh,
I was dating her during Entourage.
Right.
I know, right? I love her.
About reading.
But
right?
sometimes she has to be my reader.
My worst nightmare.
If it's intense, right. I'm like, she's like, I'm not an actor. And I'm like, I know, but it's due tomorrow morning and it's 9 p.m. I just got this 2 hours ago.
Oh.
And like,
your baby just died.
So she's trying to cry. And it's like, I can't.
I told my
this.
Girlfriend I'm not reading with her. First of all, I don't want to be criticized of my acting abilities. And
well,
I also
same,
don't,
yeah.
like, if I can't give a note, but also, Sheila said the lighting doesn't matter. My girlfriend will try to be Michael Chapman. She'll try to Academy Award winning light the thing. I'm like, babe, you look great. They just want to know if you can act. They know what you look like.
Well, about my girl says the same thing. She's like, you got to do this tape. And then I'm like, well, listen, am I just being the scene partner or do you want me to throw in my 2 cents? Or I just need to know what it is that I'm doing because I can just press record and read the lines too.
Yeah.
It always ends up in a fight. She's
but
like,
you're a director
yeah,
also.
Yeah, that's what I'm
so
saying. But it's like, I want to help. I want to help, but
Asaf,
I don't want to fight.
You're going to get them in a giant fight. You know?
Yes.
Asaf told me I was a director and you should listen to my notes on the self-tape.
That everyone listens to me. That's right. I'm so, at least somewhere.
I always say like, get a good scene partner.
Yeah.
That you're committed to, right? Yeah. So if you and I are partners, when I need you, you're there. And when you need
me, I'm there.
You know what I mean? Like that's what I try to tell Zulai. I'm like, that's my wife. I say, come on, get it. Why don't Zulai and Sarah, they should be tape partners.
I don't know, but I don't even want to talk about this because first of all, they both listen to this podcast and Sarah's been kind enough to not ask me in a long time to do it. Because it depresses me. I mean, the whole process is horrible. And I know
actors, it's that life.
You
got to
get a posse
man.
Of a couple of actors. Right. You know, my regular dude is a dad like me. He's terrific, but he's now in Australia for a month filming something. I was like, so I had a self-tape just a few days ago. I'm like, what am I going to do? Call my buddy Max. I'm like, yeah, I'm available. Yes.
Right. Yeah, and they don't give you much time. They really do. They're like, we need
not
this tomorrow.
Usually.
It's like, 10 pages? Like, you want this tomorrow by noon? I'm like, if it can be tomorrow by noon, it can be the next day by noon. I'm convinced of it. If your tape is good, it'll make it.
I just had a self-tape, and it was literally like 4 lines for a major feature and like a very comedic role. And I was like, thank you. Thank you. Because like you said, they'll know within the first 5 seconds whether you're a contender or not.
Yep.
And if you are, and if they want to see more, they'll be like, hey, they really liked you. Would you mind taping one more? Yes, I'd be happy to.
Right.
But if, don't make us do 15, 20 pages. But I know that sometimes, I don't know if that's coming from casting or if that's coming from the producers. We don't know.
I've always wondered that.
I'm or like, if they're actually watching your tape. You don't know. You know they're going to watch the ones from the big agencies first. You know you're going to watch those from the well-known people. But if you're at a smaller, medium agency, you just don't know if they actually watched your tape that you might have spent hours and hours on. You might have a lot of people pay money to go to self-tape studios.
Right.
And they're paying sometimes 50, 100, $150.
You know what I
want
to say to the two of you?
And if they're not even watching.
Right. It's like, and really, like four scenes, is that coming from casting? Is that coming from the director?
Do you know any showrunners?
I don't know. Here's what I would like to say to the two of you.
Uh-oh.
Cry me a fucking river. Do you know what? Seriously, like right now, I am 100% sure we have a great premium cable-worthy pilot. Now, we have not sent it out to a lot of people, but I've sent it to people. We can actually see, from the links.
Now you can tell from the links if
we know if they've watched them or not.
Oh,
so I now have people who have had this show for a week and a half. It's 24 minutes, and it's fucking good. And they still haven't clicked the link. And if I could get away with it, I would Jack Bauer them. That's what I would. So,
The worst thing that could happen to Doug was the ability to know if somebody's watching.
And now you're talking, you guys, sure, you put in 3 hours on your fucking scene.
I have seven months and a lot of money in this.
There are actors who are like still struggling to get their first on-camera credit. They're like trying to get an agent. They get a self-tape. They're really excited. They go to a studio. They pay $100, $150 if it's like quick turnaround. If they need a lot of times, it's, hey, super fast turnaround. So you got to pay extra for that.
Yeah.
And they send it and it's like crickets. They don't know anything.
Horrible,
at least if you go in the room, you know that casting saw you for no
it's
question.
It's tough.
That's
for
what
sure.
Sheila says too. Yeah. I mean, Sheila's
it's tough for sure, but you just got to know. I mean, you know, I would get hundreds of people. Those were the people that were the selects. And you desperately, especially when you're running a show, you so badly want that person to pop up that's perfect. Because every time they don't...
Because you could stop the shop. Like, yo, that's our guy. That's it.
But you start to... Two things happen. Number one, if you keep seeing people, it's not bad acting, but you start getting what you need, you start going, writing off, do I know what I'm doing? Like all of that stuff starts to kick in. So there's multiple processes. That being said, there's just plain assholes out there that don't give a shit about anyone's time and stuff. Kevin knows when he auditioned for the pilot, there were a couple of assholes in that room.
Well,
I was not one of them. But.
Right, no, I think it's, and again, I know I've told this story before, but I want to say it was Soderbergh or one of these directors that was saying like, listen, casting is one part of my day in pre-production. I have whatever in the morning, and from 2 to 4, I have casting. And as much as I'd love to hold every actor's hand and tell them how sorry I am and how great they are, it just doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
You got X amount of time to catch my attention in the room, and you're the guy or you're not. And that's kind of what it is, right?
I mean, you have to be, because otherwise you're not going to be running the show. If you don't keep moving and you start going, let me work with this guy until I find out if there's any possibility if they can do this role, you're
this
fine.
Is the life that we chose.
Are they not using demo reels anymore? Because that was like a big thing.
I'm not a fan of demo reels, to be honest with you. I mean,
you wouldn't want to see somebody. See, for me, I would go, oh, it's a good, if I liked an audition, I would want to then see tape.
I would want to see it after the fact, but I don't like to see it before. My best case scenario is when I see someone that I've never seen and they give me what I want. Honestly, like I never saw any tape on Jerry, Adrian. I probably saw you without Kevin I'm talking to. I would probably saw you without knowing you, but we had dinner and I knew you were the guy. I just knew you had the voice that I was looking for. And unless like you came out and tried to do something that wasn't some version of you.
If I tried to do it with an English accent.
Yeah, if you tried to do, a soft accent, that might have been
he coached me, I tell you, he coached me. He's being modest.
All right, you got to give us, before we go, you got to give it, do you remember that little scene at all with the accent? The billiards, I mean, we got to hear that.
Listen, if you want this check to clear, you will go upstairs and you will fuck my wife like the superstar you are. While I play down here with your billiards with your friends.
I mean,
something like that.
It's pretty much exactly.
It's very much like this. You know, talking like this is very. Dude, I showed up on
you
set.
See that? Did you see what he just did right there?
What? Yeah.
That the transition from the accent to the.
That's the drugs, dude. No, I showed up on set like the day of the first day on that one day. There was like literally SWF, Star Wars finished day. And I show up like, hey, Doug, I'm so excited to be here. And you're like, dude, what happened to your accent? I'm like,
Oh, to talk like this? Not a problem. I can do this. This is acting. It's not a, you know. So yes, it's not a problem. It's kind of like you're like, like you got a lot on your mind.
It's so funny because
a lot
the
of
accent,
like expensive cars.
The accent. It, you know, I say this all the time. It almost changes the entire personality.
It has to be. It's very direct. It's very strong. It's very much like not apologetic. It's very much, you, I'm going to tell you what you're doing and you're going to listen. You're going to do it or else
it's,
you're
going to, really, not going to have a problem. It's very wild because people's personalities change with the accent. And I just, you did that.
Yeah, it's very
we
true.
We just watched the show 3 days. It's like verbatim. It's like.
That's exactly what he said.
It's like fucking we had to, years
we had, haven't we had, passed. We had to rewind the billiards thing like 3 or 4 times.
I played
like,
billiards. Huh?
Well, I played billiards.
With the little
friends.
Coke sniff at the end. You know, like that wasn't written. The Coke sniff wasn't. I don't know.
Thank you so much for joining us today. That was great.
We can't wait to see, you know, all the stuff that's coming. And we're going to give you just, we have merch. So maybe Kevin.
Johnny Bananas.
Kevin will actually supply you with a shirt. By the way, I walk in just so you know. And he actually asked me, hopefully I'm not embarrassing you. But Kevin was like, hey, would you mind throwing a little money in for some merch out here? So I financed the last merch drop, which is fine. Huh? But today I go to grab a shirt. Kevin goes, those people are buying those.
I'm protecting your money. I'm protecting your money. That's somebody else's shirt that you're wearing, bro.
I'm going to take it off. I'll reseal it in a plastic shrink wrap.
That shirt is dead. We're going to have to apologize.
Somebody wants a game-worn jersey.
Dave's got something on his mind. Dave, what's up?
I was going to say to mention YouTube.
What?
Mention your clips on YouTube.
Okay. So let me just tell you what's happening here. Dave has taken a strong part in the Action Park Media YouTube page. Okay. So, Dave, you want the YouTube shout out? Okay, Dave. Thanks for interrupting
the
show.
Action
Park Media YouTube, and that's where all the clips and all the episodes where you can watch these. Dave, so
and
that's
I
how
think,
it's done, though, Dave.
Dave,
you
do you not
me.
Think a game-worn jersey would have some value? I mean,
not from you. Maybe absolutely. If Dylan had one, it might have some value.
Connelly needs a suit suck shirt. He needs to wear it before it's all over.
A few autographs too.
Yep. Anyway, so check out YouTube. Asaf has a lot of good. A lot of good stuff. And now I may go rewatch because I've been looking for a show. And 24 was one of those shows. If you guys remember, I watched. That was
people love it.
Whether that was season 4 or 5 of Entourage, my ex-wife and I we started 24 while I was working in hell, and I go to sleep early. We watched that entire 2 seasons.
Bingeable. Very bingeable.
In like 3 days. To the point I would walk on set and people are like, you are right. I'm like, I've been watching 24. So I have to see you now play 2 parts. And Kevin Dillon was on 24. So.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, so that was a good episode. Anyway, we'll be back next week with God knows who. Maybe Marlon. Maybe Gary Cole.
We got Marlon.
All right. So that wraps up.
I did a commercial with him.
You did?
With Marlon?
Yeah.
Really? What
Marlon
was that?
Young, right?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, it was a Verizon commercial. It was like a Father's Day for cell phones. And I was like, if you come in now, you can get 2 phones for 1. And he's like, yeah, hear that song?
Steve, we got to find that clip.
All right. Make me the podcast.
Doug Hill.
Let's talk. This bloody road remains a mystery.